Hi guys, welcome to Black Ink Cinema Podcast. I am joined by the amazing comedian Kazeem Jamal.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for doing this. We did this before and unfortunately the sound got messed up, so he has kindly presented himself with his time. It's great to start with his time again today. So we are very, 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 very lucky. But before we get into your phenomenal film choice, we wanted to get to know you a little bit better. And you've got a lot going on.
Too much.
You've got your day job.
Yeah.
Is?
I work in a special educational needs school. With children with social, emotional and mental health needs.
And that must take a lot. Do you get any support for yourselves as teachers?
The holidays.
Okay.
Yeah, holidays every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big plus.
Yeah.
But you always have to go back at the end. So.
You're like, oh, I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just feel like there was a big push about mental health, especially during 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would have thought, especially schools would have put things in place, or the government, to support their teachers who still had to persevere and work and deliver in these ridiculous conditions. And I still feel like we're dealing with the consequences of that.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone in the anyone in education or any kind of, you know, public sector that sat back and relied on the government deserves everything they got. there's outside agencies and stuff that the kids that support the schools support the kids, but like with anything, when it's free, there's a very long waiting list.
Yeah.
So we do what we can. We do the best we can with what we got.
Which is amazing. And I think you guys should be applauded for that. Also, congratulations are in order. The last time I saw you, you've now got a little bubba.
I do, yeah. 10 months old. I can't wait to meet him. I'm joking. I had a little boy.
Congratulations.
Had a little baby boy.
How is that as a dad? Having a son?
I thought that when he was born, there was going to be this like feeling of pressure or, you know, but I was more nervous to drive my car the first time after I passed my test. So I think it's like if you plan a baby and you've had the baby, you're prepared for the baby.
Okay.
And your role. I'm not saying you're going to know everything,
but
you now know you have this responsibility. It's like he's always been here.
Beautiful.
Me and my partner, we tried twice before this.
Just how
things happen, unfortunately, you know, we lost those pregnancies, so
sorry to hear that.
But it's one of those things. It obviously at the time it's heartbreaking, but now we've got our boy, so
miracle.
You know, it's like, you know, like I say, sometimes I wasn't worried about becoming a dad. I was worried, like, would I get to be one?
Oh.
So we did it. We did it. Yeah.
And that honestly fills me with so much joy.
I'm
very sure you're a fantastic father.
I try.
You've also joined forces with some friends of the show, Darren Griffiths, Michael Akadiri, on a refreshing podcast.
I would like to tell you about that, Rachel. I'll tell you why, because you know, Michael,
okay,
fantastic comedian,
yes,
and former healthcare worker.
Okay.
You know, we don't clap for him, we already did enough of that. We did enough claps for them. He went on BBC One Extra and forgot to shout out the podcast, so I would like to give a little plug.
Michael.
What can we say? He's a liability.
Wow. Do better, Michael.
And he was a surgeon. He couldn't remember.
Oh.
He couldn't remember that. And you know.
Oh. Okay.
I hope he remembered to sew his patients back up.
But
yeah, we have our podcast, Late Nights and Wet Wipes. It's about three black dads. Just figuring it out, you know. Along the way, and it's a topic that's always going to be there even when we're old.
I think that's great, especially seeing three black dads talking about their experience. I don't think we get to see or hear about that often, and I love it. I was telling you on the way here, I was literally cracking up on some of your topics that you guys talk about.
Not everything is taken seriously on that podcast, but with a bit of fun, bit of parenthood mixed together.
It's brilliant. So aside from teaching, running your own podcast, your friends, you do amazing stand-up, which you did here at Gym and Comedy Nights as well. We saw you and you had everyone in laughter. What made you get into comedy?
I kind of just like, it took a punt on it, really. I was a semi-professional rugby player.
As well?
This was before comedy.
And you were right. Like, give other people a praise.
I wasn't good. I think...
I mean, semi-professional, still, you have to be at a certain level.
I think they were ticking a quota. No, I'm joking. No, I was all right. But obviously, there's very good players. And I just kind of fell out of love with the game.
Mm.
Once you get to those kind of levels of anything, a lot of politics come into it. And which is fine,
yeah.
Which is fine. I'm not really complaining about that, but you don't have a lot of control.
Yeah.
It's the manager and the coaches that determine who's in and who's out and who's worthy and who's not worthy. So I retired at 24. And then my mum was like, you've done this your whole life. You worked from this from like year five.
Aww.
You know, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I started listening to a lot of podcasts of comedians and stuff like that. And I said, I think I'm going to try this comedy stuff. And she said, don't, you're not funny. So...
you can always rely on mums. You can.
Yeah.
You're so honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I went into the comedy field. Because I always thought comedians just went out on stage and that was just what was on their mind. And then I learned, you know, the behind-the-scenes tricks and how to build up material and things like that. And I said, I think I can at least do that, even if I was very bad at it. And then from the first night I did it, I had a really good gig.
Yeah.
So I said, I'll do this forever, without any money.
You know, I got this.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Even if there was no money involved, nothing, I didn't need to be famous. I said, I'll do this all the time because I control, you know, what I say, what I, you know, when I gig. The only thing that's out of your control really is how long you perform for at that level. And two, I thought it was easy because the first gig went so well. And then from gig two till about last week, it was really difficult.
No, it's not. I've seen it. And then, it really isn't. For you, it isn't.
Oh, yeah. Now we're getting somewhere.
Who are your main influences?
Comedically or just in life?
Actually, just in life. Let's do that.
Just in life. My mum, number one.
Love that.
Number one. Joint number one with an asterisk now is my son.
Okay.
But I don't want to start any beef between them two.
No, of course. I think your mum will be like, I was here first.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to get...
It's going to get sick.
It's going to get awkward at Christmas, I can tell, when she just gets socks. So, yeah, he influences me, you know, just to do well and to be somebody that he turns around and goes, that's my dad.
That's
you know, that's my main aim, not to be like... This is what he bought me, or this is, you know, to be for him to tell his friends and things, that's my dad, or a future partner. I want you to meet my dad. So, yeah, that's, you know, number two. I'll give you top three.
Love that.
I think this is going to sound quite narcissistic, but number three is me.
I love that, actually. Yeah. It's not.
So, you got to influence yourself, you know. Harder than anyone
Absolutely.
Can, you know, from that exterior. So I put myself in there.
I think that's a great answer. And comedic-wise, who do you inspire to be like?
That's a tough question. I get that a lot, and it's like, you want to take pieces from loads of different comedians that you've seen, but then it's kind of like, do I want to be like them or do I just enjoy what they do? So like I got like Kevin Hart, who a lot of people have said has fallen off. I don't think so. I think he's amazing.
He's a mogul now.
Yeah,
he's
I think his work rate is
incredible.
Obviously Dave Chappelle for the freeness, the storytelling.
I love how Dave is just Dave.
Dave is just
like,
Dave.
If you either love me or you hate me, I don't really care. I'm gonna be Dave.
And he's not beholden to anyone. Whereas Literally. Kevin is got a lot of deals and partnerships, so he's got employees, he has to kind of behave.
Yeah.
Where Dave is Dave and he makes a lot of money being himself.
Yeah.
But I got, like, you know, other, you know, influences and stuff. It's just like people that I see on circuit, Michael, Darren, the you know, the older comedians, Slim, Kevin J.
Yeah, they're all great.
Yeah, so like those guys. I remember seeing Kevin J on MTV.
Yeah.
And then I did a gig with him, and I'm and Slim, and those guys seeing him on TV, and I'm like, I'm talking to Slim.
Yeah.
And Bubba Tunde. I think everyone knows who our king is, though, and obviously Mo.
What he's done
is amazing.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And the they're all great people, but because of where he's got to, the nicest guy.
Yeah.
You know, half the stuff he told me, I didn't believe. Not because I thought he was a bad person. I was like, you're too busy to remember this interaction and bring me into stuff. But, you know, not to you know, to stunt or anything like that. But I DM'd him the other day, and I was like, all right, we'll see.
Yeah.
Because he's very busy. Not because he's a... Yeah, I want to make that clear. Not because he's arrogant or anything like that. He's a very nice guy. And within 15 minutes, he got back to me.
What?
Yeah, and this is the guy that's running Black British Takeover, on TV show.
He's doing so much as well for the culture, which I love. Like,
and he still had the time to respond back to me. And that's just a testament to you. So I feel like he is our North Star.
Yeah.
And not to, you know, mimic him, but to be like, right, this is attainable, but where do I want to go? Because he's opened so many doors.
Absolutely.
You know, you go, oh, I didn't know we could do that. And I go, oh, okay, cool.
And I think it's so refreshing as well, because the industry, I work in telly, the industry has a habit of like, this works, we're going to make this work across for everything and anything. But he just came and showed like, no, I'm completely different. I'm outside the box. And everyone loves it. They're winning awards. Do you know what I mean? They completely refreshed Channel 4.
100%.
In which the way that they were branded initially. So it was quite nice to see that full circle. 100%.
I think my theory or what I see is that he could replace Ant and Dec by himself. I think.
Mm. Say it louder for the people up there. Say louder. I mean, Ant and Dec is literally what I was talking about. Like, I'm sure there's a million Ant and Decs out there that could do just a great job what they're doing. And I'm not saying black, just literally just another Ant and Dec or whatever race. And I just feel like they just get all the jobs.
Yeah, because for sure. Ant and Dec.
No hating. I'm just, it's no, just time. Maybe other people would benefit from having an opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And I reckon he could
do
both their
jobs.
He's
so charismatic. Yeah, exactly. Totally agree with you there. And I've been to both of those takeovers and they were fantastic. And I just love the turnout. The fact that we can pack out the O2 to celebrate British comedians.
It's amazing. So if you're watching this, Mo, let me get on the next one.
Our audition. So obviously being a comedian, it's really difficult. The whole cancel culture is ready to pounce and jump. Do you ever feel... like you have to tiptoe around certain subjects, or do you just feel like it is what it is? It's comedy. Mm. It's just for bands. Don't take it so personal.
It's like a scale.
Mm.
It's never balanced. So last year, I was fortunate enough to get signed. Shout out Get Comedy.
I just think that's brilliant.
When you stop looking for something, somehow it just turns up on your door.
Law of attraction.
That happened for me, and I'm very grateful and love working with them. So prior to that, though, I was doing like, you know, some paid gigs, some clubs, you know, but it's tough. And then you're doing like open mics, new material nights, or very smaller shows. And there you're kind of like, these are my jokes, I'm going to say them.
Yeah.
There's no risk. But then I got signed and I started working in these clubs that you dream of being in. And now you're there and, you know, your diary's packed out. And there's some jokes where you go, right, not everyone in the room, I'm going to be their cup of tea.
Yeah.
You know, so is it worth it now to tell a joke? That is a perfectly fine joke, and if someone wanted to break it down, you could show this is not offensive.
Yeah.
Well, you can't say it's not offensive, but this is what the joke actually means, right? But you don't want to tell that joke maybe because they might then complain, and then now you can't play that club, or, you know, things like that. So there are things I assess in the moment when I'm on stage and go, am I going to tell this joke?
Yeah.
And then it's like, angels, like, don't do it, you've got a career. And then, you know, the other one pops up.
The other one.
And it's like, just do it. It'll be fun. So, yeah, and then where I've got to right now is like, I don't need to say it. It's not going to suddenly make me a star or, you know, get me a tour, one joke. But once you have your core audience, this is why Dave can pretty much have whatever joke he wants.
Yeah.
Because he's got his core audience. And there's no one now that can tell him you're not performing here, because he's just doing theatre. So if he wants to hire a theatre, unless the theatre turn around and say you're not performing here, but theatres like money.
He's going to say no to, you know, to Dave.
And he's going to bring in a lot of money.
Mm.
So kind of like when I do my show next year, everything will be in the show.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be my presentation.
Have you got a date for that?
I want to debut in Edinburgh next year, and then hopefully take it on tour.
Looking
after
forward
that.
To it.
Yeah, so that, in a long story short, you can and you can't,
yeah,
depending on what you want for yourself, and until you find your community, and they go, we know, you know, enough about you, we trust you, and we're not going to leave just because of a job. We know what we bought, where some people, they've just bought a ticket, they don't know the lineup. And then you might have made a joke about, I don't know, vegans. And they're like, I'm one of them. And you're like, all right.
Calm down.
Yeah. So, scary for some people. I'm not too scared of it.
Yeah.
But I like, at this moment in time, I like money more than I like problems.
It's a good statement.
Yeah, and working and progressing. So, yeah.
I'm here for it. So, where can people find you on your socials?
Everything is Kazeem.Jamal. You can follow me on Threads, because I've been banging that out all day.
Threads?
Yeah, Instagram's version of Twitter came out today.
What? I'm such an auntie.
The world has gone crazy.
I can't. You better download shows.
Yeah,
you Threads. Better get on it. I don't know if I need another freaking
app. Oh, no, but it's
app.
Integrated with Instagram.
Insta, why are you being so extra? Like, Twitter.
Well, it's
already...
Meta. Oh. It's Mark Zuckerberg. So, really, your Instagram and your Threads are one thing now. Okay. But they're two different apps. But you can jump from one to one from each app.
I can do that anyway.
Yeah. So that's everything is Kazeem.Jamal.
Okay. Nice.
K-A-Z-W-E-M. It used to be Funny Black Comic because that was easier for people to spell.
But then Kazeem.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. People I've known for ages still spell my name wrong. Lovely. Like my dad. No.
I mean, my name's Rachel, and people still manage to F that up. So
yeah. So. My agent said, oh, you can keep it, but do you want to reach the heights you want to reach and then be walking down the street and someone says, funny black dad, funny black comic?
Yeah.
Or do you want them to say your name? And I was like, I want them to say my name. Yeah, I don't want to be a character.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Kazeem.Jamal.
We'll go check it out, please. The film you have chosen to talk about today is Farming. Fantastic movie. Written and directed by the actor Adewale Akinyoye. Agbaje, I said it, who people will have seen in Suicide Squad, Lost, and 50 Cent's film Get Rich, Die Trying, and is loosely based and inspired on his own childhood. Now, I absolutely love this film. I'm quite annoyed that it didn't win all the awards and BAFTAs that it needed to, because I just think it's such an underrated movie. Why did you pick it?
I picked it because... although that I didn't live that experience, I lived an experience, or still live an experience of, you know, the narrative of the story, which is, you know, a young man, young black man, losing his identity, but to obviously quite an extreme level. And for me, you know, my mum's mixed race, so my nan's white, my granddad's black, Nigerian. And then on my dad's side is Antiguan. And then I went to private primary school, and then I went to state secondary school, and then I played rugby with Aussies and Kiwis and Samoans, and went up and down the country. So it was kind of like, I don't know. I didn't stick in one thing, you know, whereas I've got friends that are, you know, all their friends are black and whatever, and that's great, and they do this and this only, music or whatever. And then I've got friends that, you know, from where I grew up in secondary school, and they're like geezers. And, you know, and they go to the pub and all that kind of stereotypical stuff. And whenever I was around either one, I was kind of like, I'm not fully integrated in any of these groups, really. Like, when the Nigerians or the African friends are talking about cultural things, I'm like, yeah, I guess so, you know? And then...
You didn't feel like you could relate?
No, because my granddad's the only Nigerian member of my family here. And I've never been there. So, you know, it wasn't... There's obviously values that carry over.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, culture and stuff like that, like, I should never have really pursued a sport, you know, stereotypically. It's like education.
Yeah.
Where my mum was like, do what you want, as long as you're happy. So when I speak with other people from the African community and stuff like that, and they say that, I'm like, I don't know that life. I could be... My mum once told me, if you're a bin man, be the best bin man. That's it. And and then on the white side, it was just obvious. It's just like, you sure this is your cousin? You know? But then in hindsight, I feel like it served me quite well, because now I go on stage and I can relate to so many different people. I don't think I sound like I'm, you know, from here or from there. It's kind of like I'm just a bit of a shapeshifter, and I can adapt to whatever you put in front of me.
But I think that adds value as well, like, and being able to have those different relationships and interactions actually makes you more of a, I hate to say this, but like, worldly person. So it makes it easier for you to be adaptable, whereas some people that are kind of just used to a linear lifestyle will find it quite difficult.
That's why I'm quite excited to build a following, because then I have, you know, essentially outside of family and stuff like that, then I have like a base, a home, and be like, this is my people, and hopefully it looks like all different types of people.
And you'll be surprised. I think a lot of people think that they're the only ones who have experienced something, and actually you'll find your tribe out there, people that have gone through similar experiences and probably feel the same way that you do, and who will naturally gravitate to you. So you then realise you're not as alone as you once thought.
That's why I like that film. It's not the only reason, but that's why I like the film. Picked the film. It was a great insight as well.
The title is fascinating. It comes from the practice known as farming, where Nigerian parents would foster their children out to white working class families. That wasn't something I had heard of until I'd seen this film. Did you know anything about it prior to it?
I didn't know about the name of it, of that practice, but I do know my great nan did foster children as well. So there's, like, when she passed away, there was like black people turning up that we'd never seen before. I hadn't seen before. I'm pretty sure my mum hadn't, or had forgotten if she was young and stuff like that. But they were people that had been fostered and then went back to their families. So after seeing that, it all kind of then clicks in place in your head, to say, oh, okay, right, this was the norm, so to speak, way back when.
I think it's really interesting as well, because the it's almost like they don't want to foster them. It's kind of being forced upon them, but they get paid. So it's like, I kind of have to do this. And it's a very weird dynamic, and it's interesting how it was shown in the movie.
Because in the movie, the mum was kind of like unhinged, wasn't she? She had some that she liked.
Yeah.
And then obviously the main character, Annie, he couldn't do right for doing wrong, you know. And so that was quite kind of a weird dynamic.
I feel like it also touches upon you know, the white superiority complex, white savior complex, like, you know, it's okay, I'm coming to save the day kind of thing.
Yeah.
And any, the main character, he wants to, wants her approval so much, like he's willing to do anything and everything to just make her happy, which follows him in most of his adult life.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. But it, what I realized from my great nan is that obviously she was born in 1911, and like, so what, so all behavior is communication, you know, and when you can look, when you can take emotion out of something as well and look on it and be like, not to be like a pacifist or anything like that, but to say, well, what were these people going through themselves as well, as well as, you know, the kids that have, may look at themselves as being abandoned, the parents that felt like they had to do that to go and get their education. When you start stripping that back and going like, these people are under a lot of stress, you know, obviously some things you could just can't condone.
Wild.
But in terms of like, in terms of like my nan and stuff like that, it's like, you know, wars, gone through wars and depressions, and now you need money, and it's like, even if the kids were blue, you'd be like, what? Maybe I don't want to foster this this big head ute, man, but I need beans, you know?
I need to eat.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's a concoction of a lot of trauma, I would say, on loads of different levels.
And it stars the extremely talented Damson Idris, who I think gives a lifetime performance in this, and I'm not quite sure again how he didn't win all of the awards, because I think he's so good, which has gone on to show in Snowfall. He's just an incredible actor. How do you feel his performance was?
I thought it was amazing. You know, when I first watched the film, I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was. He still doesn't know who I am. But it was good. It was very good. Amazing. You know, like, acting, you have to be, people say, oh, you're so brave going on stage.
I said that. I literally
have said that to you. Yeah. But I choose my dialogue. I choose what I will show you. And even though this isn't his life, he still has to put himself in quite a vulnerable position.
Especially this character.
Yeah.
It was super hard.
Right. And to get in that, you know, mindset to play this character and then to have, you know, people watch it as well, and, you know, so he was quite, I feel like he was quite naked in the film.
Yes, yeah.
You know, which is an amazing attribute to be able to do, because, you know, that's how one of the ways you're going to connect with the audience, no matter who's watching. I don't know if you could find someone that watched it seriously.
Yeah.
That didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
You know?
So. If you don't feel anything or don't cry, I can't be your friend.
So.
I'm sorry. You're cold.
Yeah, we're worried about you.
Definitely. What did you think about her dynamic between the children and all the different children?
It was complex. She seemed to like really care for, you know, most,
the little girl.
Yeah, the little girl. And then she would just come out with things that, you know, whether it was out of awkwardness or it was actually in, like, just because, you know, you're watching a film that was just funny, and like you couldn't help but laugh.
Yeah.
And then you go, because it was a laugh, like, did she really just say that?
Yeah, it's an awkward laugh.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, so that's when I say, like, there's a lot going on, and it could, like, not to take away from the film, but it could have been really good as a series.
Yeah.
So you could really break these characters down and find out, you know, the nucleus to them, like what makes them, why are they, you know? Because we all went and watched Joker and felt sorry for the psychopath running around shooting people.
Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
I too will be blowing up shit.
Right, and so I thought that could have been an interesting insight to, you know, does she love these kids, and then kind of like, is she protecting herself by them being mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And pushing them away? because she knows they've got to go back one day. Mm. She's worried about what people are going to say outside. She's going to worry about her own kids, you know, feeling like they might feel abandoned.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. It didn't seem like the husband was really on board with the whole situation.
He was really just dismissive about the whole thing.
Yeah, and you very rarely saw him as well. Yeah. So it was kind of like she's doing this all on her own. Mm. So yeah, it was complex is the word I'd give to her relationship.
Definitely. And I think she played that really well because up until that point, I hadn't really seen Kate Beckinsale stripped back like that.
Yeah.
Very unglammed. And
and I love a film when you forget that's who it is.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not on the same level, but Mary J. Blige in Power.
Oh, okay.
Every now and again, I go, oh my God, that's Mary. Because she's just, she makes you forget that's her.
Auntie Mary.
Yeah. So, you know, when you forget, when a film can make you, and that's what this does as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good piece of work.
Absolutely. As we mentioned, Eni is based on the writer and director of the film. And the scene where he goes back to Nigeria is taken directly from his childhood. At 8 years old, Adewale went back to Nigeria and found it really difficult to try to adjust and settle in Nigeria. He didn't feel like he belonged there. Have you ever experienced that, where you feel like you don't belong?
Oh, yeah. Mm. At the EDL march.
that will do it.
Yeah, no, I accidentally walked into an EDL march.
Oh, you're being serious?
It was an accident.
Okay. I thought it was bad.
Yeah, no. That may be a story for a different day.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I want to know, though.
Oh, it's so I was walking from Covent Garden back to Charing Cross,
right.
And we were going through, like, you know, like Covent Garden's got all the food stuff. Mm. We were walking back through there, and we got out. What's that road called? Is it Strand or?
There is the Strand.
So it's like
the Acre as well.
I don't know. It's that long road that Charing Cross is on.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I'm with my partner at the time back then. And we walk out onto the street, and there's just hundreds of white men and some women just parading down the street. And I'm like, who's playing? What game's on? You know, what's going on here? So we started walking with the march, and unknowingly, we're walking with this march, and just, I wonder what's going on.
Did none of them look at you like, yo?
Not
because
I feel
remember. Like you would have stood out.
But they're also they're also in the public as well. So I'm not the only. I come to learn I'm not the only random there.
Okay.
And it only makes sense when I hear them start chanting, and they start chanting, Tommy Robinson, and I go. I turn to my partner at the time, and I go, oh, we shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be here.
Awkward.
Yeah, and there's a helicopter in the sky, and then there's police everywhere. And then I remember there's a guy with a camera, and I kept trying to get in the camera.
Trying to mess up their whole game.
No, this was just like a journalist. But I was like, look, I just need publicity. I just want to be on camera. Someone sees me in the background. I saw you on TV earlier. You know, and then I got in an argument with two of them. And then, a group of them, really. And then the group walked off. And this guy hadn't realised the group had walked off. And when he did, he lost all composure and all bravery. Because he realised now he's very vulnerable now. And it could have gone very sideways for him. But, yeah, we got out of there ASAP.
That's quite scary. I mean, we can laugh about it now, but it's quite scary because it could have turned...
Yeah, I wasn't too scared, really. Well, my partner was.
Yeah, anytime there's a white mob chanting that, I would be concerned.
Yeah.
So, of course, we were talking about the film themes as identity. And the question of, are you English enough, often comes up. We often are asked as black people, where are you really from? Which is a very annoying question.
Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced that as well? Is that something that you can relate with? Or?
Oh, yeah. Mm. And... I see it creeping more and more to the black community as well. I think with the way I look, it's very hard to pinpoint where I'm from.
Mm.
So people always say, where are you from? And I go, I was born here, England. And they go, oh no, like, where were your parents born? And I go, England. And they go, right, what about your grandparents? And only one out of four is true, but I go, England.
Yeah.
And then they get bored and walk off. But yeah, you have that conversation. Mm. You get that question asked, you know. But for me, from my makeup, I can actually sit down and go, well, I am English. Mm. I do have that.
Mm.
You know, when people think you're not English enough, to be honest, I don't care if I'm not enough of anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very proud of who I am and where I'm from. I don't need to prove that to nobody. I've never been to Nigeria, but if you ask anyone where I'm from, it's the number one thing I say. It's been me and my mum my whole life.
Mm.
My granddad's Nigerian. His household was Nigerian.
Mm.
So my nan was near enough Nigerian by the end of it, you know.
By default,
right? So you know, so yeah, we should start caring more about people's actual, you know, values and their character, rather than where they're from. You know, because I could be English and still be a waste man.
Mm-hmm.
What does that prove? Or I could be from Nigeria and be the nicest person you've ever met, or vice versa. You know what I mean?
Oh, Kazim, if only life was
that simple.
That simple.
Yeah.
You and I, that makes complete sense, but yeah, we know we live in dire times. In the film, Enny gets involved with a group of white skinheads. The initial scene when he gets beaten up, they stripped him, spray paint him, brutally beat him up, and basically just embarrass his life. How did this scene make you feel? Because I remember watching it and I was angry, and then I just sobbed.
Yeah, that scene is tough to watch.
Mm.
Because I remember being in school, and I went to secondary school in a very white area. So in my school, there was a handful of black, I went to all boys school, black boys in the school.
Mm.
And I started moving up the years, and then this new boy came, black boy. And I remember he was dancing in the playground, and like kids were like flicking coins at him like he was working. And I just gripped him to one side and said, don't make me ever see you do that again, right?
Oh,
you don't work for these people.
Mm.
Right? You can't, don't come out here and be a clown.
Be a jester.
Yeah. Now, I could have been a bit of a hypocrite there, because I was a prolific class clown. But I would have been one in an all-black school, all-white school, yeah, all-girls school, whatever school I would have been. But it was kind of like, I guess from the outside looking in, I was like, and it made me check myself a little bit, like, remember who you are as well. So when you watch that scene as well and see what he goes on to, you know, want from them,
it's
kind of like screaming like, what are you doing? You just want to grab him and be like, come with us. So yeah, it was tough to watch, but necessary for the film and the story and the message as well.
Because you see him go through a journey of self-hate.
Yeah.
Like literally scrubbing his skin, painting his face white.
Yeah.
And honestly, just every time, even just now talking about it, it just breaks my heart, because society can make you feel like that, let alone, you know, your nearest at that time. You know, there was no social media when he was growing up. But so it's what you're surrounded by.
Mm-hmm.
And if all he sees is, like, you know, white kids who are telling him you're trash or rubbish or this, beating him up because of the colour of his skin, his mom is saying not so nice things and treating him a certain way. Of course, it's gonna affect your mental health.
Oh, for sure.
Like, and how you see yourself and believe in yourself.
Even on the lowest scale. Like I said earlier, I was fortunate enough to, you know, that my mum, she worked really hard and sent me to this private primary school.
Mm.
And it was the same again. Like, there wasn't many people there that looked like me.
Mm.
And I remember wanting to be able to gel my hair like David Beckham.
Oh, of course.
Because everyone else could.
Mm.
You know, and if there was more people that looked like me, or if, I'd be like, nah, I'm good, man. And we see that a lot even by today's standards, you know, people wanting to change their hair and stuff like that, or... And even vice versa now. So now we're the in thing.
It's so messed up, because while we're sharing, I too wanted my hair to fall a certain way. I remember saying to my mum, like, why doesn't my hair fall like this? And she just, being an African mum, just laughed me out of town.
Yeah.
But it was a genuine question, because obviously you went to school, ours was predominantly Asian and white, and everyone's hair just fell down. Do you know what I mean? And just swung in the wind, and ours didn't. We didn't really have that. I think it was probably more different in America, where you kind of had that, like, black love kind of thing going on. But here in the UK, we didn't really have as many representations growing up.
And I think in America, they are African Americans. They, you know, from my understanding, I'm not saying this as a blanket statement, but that's their identity. When you say, if we were to say to them, where are you from? They would say, I'm African American.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't know much past that.
Yeah.
Whereas here, even within our own communities, it's very much divided. Or obviously with social media and things like that now, bonds and stuff are much stronger. But it was kind of like, you know, you could, West Indians, you know, Africans, and, you know, that division and stuff like that. And even then within that, well, I'm Nigerian, I'm Ghanaian, you know, and stuff like that. So there is those fractions that make you go, well, I might just stay over here, or well, I don't know too much about that over there. So it's very, like the movie, you know, intended, it's a lot of layers.
Yeah.
It's a lot of layers.
Which is what I like now. It's like, it's just one big melting pot, from music to film, like everything. It's just, I was like, I wish I was young growing up now. Like, the kids have no idea. Like, you actually feel the communities, like more of a community spirit within the black community, rather than when we were growing up. It just wasn't very divided within itself, as you said.
I never felt, you know, safer, more connected, you know, to my community than when I went to the Black Lives Matter march.
Oh, yeah.
When I was there, like, and on paper or whatever, you know, whatever they want to say about us and how we behave and stuff like that, on paper, you know, quotations and everything, that should have been one of the most dangerous places to have been, you know, because you had just obviously a large group of people, and then you had people from different places, you know, and stuff like that. You had people in tracksuits and, you know, face masks and all of the stuff that was going on. And I never felt like, oh my God, we are together, and why can't it always be like this?
Yeah. It was a lovely shift.
Yeah.
I remember we were having this discussion, Shaz and I, and I was just like, wow. So it took, okay, we're getting there.
It took
an extreme event to happen for us to feel a little bit like, okay, wait a minute, guys. I think we need to have each other's back, because clearly...
Stronger in numbers.
Yeah, exactly. In the film, the same way, like, for example, the mother treats her children like pets, we see lots of examples of this, so does the skinhead gang treat him like a pet.
Yeah.
The film makes an interesting connection with the gang leader's pet snake and how they view any. So the snake is like an exotic pet, and that's how they see any, an exotic person who's just like this thing that they want to play with. But it's funny also, they kind of trick him into like keeping your enemies closer. It's, they hate him so much, but they would rather have him part of the gang than not part of the gang. I just found that such a weird thing, because to me, if I hate somebody or something so much, I want to be as far away from you as possible. And for them to still allow him, even though they hate this person, I just found that really strange.
I guess it's kind of like that conqueror mentality. Like, way back when, if you conquered a country, you wouldn't not tell anyone about it. So if they've been, they might have that mentality of like, look at what we've done. We can't stand him, but we've broken him.
Yes.
And he's ours now.
Yeah.
And you know, it might put other people on notice as well.
Mm.
It's like an example.
Yes, it is.
Look what we've done. Look how dangerous we are. Mm. And then even for, you know, their community, look what we've done for the community.
Mm.
We've broken one of them.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
And we're using him for our own gain
as
well.
Yeah. But what was interesting in the film as well was the, you know, altercations they had with other white people
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
So there are parts of the movie it's just like, are you lot just Asbo children that yeah. can't behave?
It just seemed like they were had nothing going on and they were bored and this yeah. was their form of entertainment. Because yeah. like, for example, when they trashed the post office, if you're supposed to be so patriotic that you're literally
the
trashing...
Royal Mail.
The Royal Mail. I don't feel any more patriotic than the Royal Mail and yeah. you were trashing that. you're contradicting your whole spiel.
Yeah, yeah. But... I'm sure we'll all agree, racists aren't that smart.
No,
they're not
no
that,
lesson here.
Yeah, they're not that smart. But what was also interesting as well is that they were listening to ska music. Oh, and I was like, what's
hard.
Going on?
This is my issue with racism yeah. or racist people. Pick your struggle. Like, you can't, I'll accept ska, I'll accept this,
mm-hmm.
I'll take you, but I hate you. Because it's like, ska music is reggae music.
Yeah.
And you're literally listening to reggae music while hating the people that make mm-hmm. the music.
But we see that now. We see that now. Yes, you know, it's everyone loves Raheem Sterling and Bukayo Saka.
Until they miss the penalty.
Until they miss the penalty. And then all of a sudden they're monkeys again.
It's conditional, you know? It's conditional love or conditional
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
And don't mean to dredge that all back up, but I remember watching it and I was like, literally, like, if they miss this, it's the end of the world.
Oh,
like,
I think we were like, all at the edge of our seat.
And the fact that obviously all our boys missed it, I was like, wait a minute, guys, it's not that deep. Like, let's
yeah.
all calm down. And considering we're there because of these particular players
mm-hmm.
who have scored the goals, mm-hmm. won the games,
yeah.
although they will just say Kane did it all by himself after three goals were already in,
right.
but let's not get into that.
I remember watching that. And you can't get me now, Metropolitan Police. I'm not Boris Johnson. You can't bring me back for new evidence. You didn't have evidence in the first place. I had the game one on my phone, and I was driving back, and I got this like, little groove by my gear stick.
Yeah.
And I had it there, and I'm on the motorway, and you know, it's a Gareth Southgate setting the black players up, and I was just there like. You have to score this. Not for the game.
It's nothing to do with the game.
You have to score this.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if it was just me, but I felt like they're going to miss.
Mm.
They're going to miss.
I just felt like the pressure was so much that I had the same weird... And it's not me manifesting, guys, okay, because I was really trying.
Mm.
But I did feel like...
Yeah, but I can see what he was doing. He was setting them up to be the heroes.
At the same, yes.
Yeah.
And I do love Gareth Southgate.
Yeah.
I do.
But with that in mind, you know, all is forgiven, Gareth.
Oh, no. It's the fact that he went against the grain and has half the team.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? You can do what you want, Gareth. Like, honestly, get no problem, no questions from me. It's fine.
But that same unconditional love, conditional love, sorry, not unconditional, is what we see in the film. You know, the mum continuously...
Mm.
You know, reprimands his behaviour with a threat of, "I'll send you back to where you're from." You know, where you went and you didn't like it and you were scared. And uses that, so it's like, "Behave or else, so I won't be this nice, or you know, I won't accept you."
And not like she's nice anyway; she's absolutely vile. But he will take her vileness over her not being there at all.
Well, what I've known from working in the industry that I work in.
Mm.
Is that all attention is good attention. So a lot of young people will mess about just so you notice them.
Yeah.
So even if her attention is, you know, not good and it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
So probably why he sought it out so much, because he didn't have anything else.
It's actually a really sad story, or that part of his life. There's a lot of hard scenes to watch. Which ones did you find most difficult, or if there's one?
Oh, man. Right at the end, when he's obviously in a facility, you know, to support him with his mental health as well as, you know, other things. And he kind of has a breakdown and you see the anger and then you see the sadness and the stuff like that. And that was tough to watch because I've been there for other things, not, you know, what he's been through. And I know, and it was like, I know what you're feeling. And it's like, it was obviously, it's just a character. Mm. But like I said, the movie's so good. You're like, I know what you're feeling.
Yeah.
That was tough to watch, because it was kind of like, you know, it's just me and my mum in the cinema. Mm. When you see something like that in an open space, you're like, can everyone else see me? Mm. And they're like, no, bro, we're watching a film.
Yeah.
But you feel, so you feel vulnerable. Naked. You feel open. Like, do you guys know I've done that? I've been like that before, and you know, been so upset. That was tough. Obviously the suicide attempt was really tough. Although I don't mean to be rude, or it's definitely not like that. You can understand why.
Absolutely.
He's had enough.
I honestly commend watching this. I could not believe it was the same person talking about the film that they've gone through those things. Suicide's always difficult to understand, but I think that was a very good visual example of how someone could get to that point.
100%. So that was tough. And one that was tough to watch, just based on principles and values, was when his dad came to the police station and he attacked his dad and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And obviously, having, not like I say, not necessarily the culture passed down, but the values and the principles, it's like, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, you're like, big man, you can't do that.
I was like, he was definitely not raised by a Nigerian dad.
Yeah.
That is behaviour that is very evident.
Yeah, I was like, me and my mom both looked at each other.
Wild.
Like, did you just see that?
Wild. I was worried for him. I was
right,
like,
yeah.
I was like, mm-mm.
Yeah. It's just like, you just saw your cousin do something. And yeah. You're like,
what? I'm going to leave the
you're
room.
You're going to get it.
Yeah. In fact, I'll go get the instruments now.
Yeah, man. I've got nothing to do. Just cleared my calendar.
Let's watch this horror show that's about to unfold. But despite how difficult the film is to watch, probably like 90% of it, the film actually has an uplifting ending. Like Adewale in real life, Eni ends up getting a law degree and, as we know, becomes a successful actor and filmmaker. And it's not very often we get to see a happy ending, especially with all of the horrific experiences that he goes through. Yeah. Were you expecting that to happen?
No, it was quite hard to see how this ended without some kind of tragedy.
Yeah.
So when you saw that, on one hand, you're kind of like, you see him get his law degree and you go, we knew you were African. Like, we knew it.
He remembered.
Yeah, we knew it, man. And there was loads of things that were nice that got resolved. Even like the relationship between him and his foster mum right at the end. You're kind of like, if you had just done that at the beginning,
on the jump,
we wouldn't be here. But everyone's got their own journey. And it was at some point, at some time, God, the universe, I don't know, whatever you believe in, said this story needs to be told. And I think it's good that it was was based on a true story.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this wasn't just somebody's imagination. This actually happened, and this is actually a happy ending and a successful ending.
And honestly, now every time I see him in a TV series or a film, I'm even filled with more admiration.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, you're literally a walking testament. Like, of turning your life around.
Yeah, anything is possible.
Yeah.
You know, if you want it bad enough, so you can go on and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quickly become one of my favourite films, just because of the true story and also the performances in it are just top tier. Yeah. One scene that I found difficult was when they attacked the teacher.
Yeah.
God, I was like, oh my God, breathe. I literally had to coach myself with breathing because I was like, this is very stressful. And it just showed the level of lack of humanity that the skinheads have as well. It's like everyone can get it.
Yeah,
there was like
nobody's safe.
No.
And that was another person, and you were just like, if you not blaming the teacher, but like, if you just got to him. If you just come into his life a little bit earlier, you know,
because she was really trying,
really
so hard.
For me, I used to get in so much trouble at school, and I was like, I've had teachers like that,
yeah.
So I know what it's like to be like, nah, and keep it moving. To see how the skinheads behaved as well. Like, my mum's told me stories of being chased by skinheads and stuff like that. So you know, I should have brought her with me because she would have been able to be like, this is how it's impacted me. Like, my mum can't see a Union Jack or an England flag. You know, we've viewed houses and seen them on the street and she's like, we're not living here. And they might be really nice neighbours, but just what that means to her.
And you know what? I literally was having this conversation with one of my white friends because I was like, what the Union Jack means to you is completely different what it means to me.
Yeah.
For me, it just dredges up colonisation.
Yeah.
What comes with that. And, you know, like your mum, the trauma that she connects that with.
And still how far we have to go as well.
Because
we've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go.
Such a long way.
And I sometimes, even like myself, like, I'm like, it's just a flag, mum. And she's like, no. And then as you get older, you're like, yeah, I understand your trauma now, your things that have happened to you. Why, seeing that, you're like, I can't look at that every day.
Yeah.
They could be people.
It's a trigger.
It's a trigger.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter who's flying it, I can't see it. Mm. You know, like that. So, you know, she really enjoyed the coronation.
She tuned in early for that one. Well, thank you so much for choosing a brilliant and underrated movie, which I hope you guys could all go and watch, and you can find it on Disney or Amazon. They make you pay. I have a conspiracy theory about this, but it's
support
okay.
Black business. Just tell yourself that.
Just, yeah. Okay? But we are heading into the Black Geek Cinema Quickfire Round, where I just want to know or learn about your film likes.
Yes.
So, who's your favourite Black British actor or actress?
My favourite Black British actor is a new actor, but I like it because of what he makes me feel, you know, and that is Kano.
Oh, give it to me. Oh,
that
my
is
God.
Kano, yeah.
Kano.
And I can't wait to see what else he stars in. Yeah.
Is literally Shaz is here because she knows how I feel about Kano.
Yeah.
She knows how I feel about Kano musically.
Yeah.
But
oh yeah, Kano was my first album.
Oh.
Yeah. Home Sweet Home.
Come on. Yeah. Oh my God, know all the words. But acting wise, I've never been so surprised from literally anybody than I was from him. Like that scene when, you know, the young white boy died
in the house fire. Oh.
I was sobbing. But I was sobbing because of how Kano was acting. You know,
and
like
if
his
you
reaction.
Know the story, you know that he's known this kid from this like scruffy street kid that was running around nicking phones.
Yeah.
This big mean drug dealer has taken this kid under his wing and looked out for him.
Yeah.
And then really in the whole thing that's his only friend.
Yes.
And he's just lost his friend.
Yeah. It was really sad, but like you said, I 110% agree with you there that he's such a great actor.
If he's in something, I'm going to watch it.
Absolutely. Because I feel like he also was like, I'm not a rapper, I'm acting. Whereas some rappers, you still see them.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't see Kano.
Yeah.
I saw...
Sully. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to write on a MOBO script last year.
Come on.
He won an award.
Oh.
It was, you know, in correlation to what you just said there, like, he said, you can't just do your art the way you want to do your art. You know, there must have been people that told him, don't be an actor, don't be an MC, don't be a musician, don't be this, don't be that. And he's like, don't let anyone ever tell you how and when to do your art. And you can see that in his performances.
Yeah, honestly.
So I hope you get some more roles.
Yeah, I saw that because I was on Daniel Kaluuya and they were looking at some scripts and I was like, oh my God, this is happening. I'm here for it. Like,
I
can't wait to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So back to you, American.
I'm going to go with Denzel. All right, but I don't want to be a stereotypical answer like, yeah, Training Day or Man on Fire. Yeah, or American Gangster. Love all those films.
Mm-hmm.
American Gangster, Man on Fire was my favourite film.
That's my favourite Denzel
yeah,
film.
Yeah, of his, you know, for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I like him in Fences.
Oh. Yeah.
And I don't think that's a film that many people saw Denzel in and went, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
And I like to see him in that of like the struggle of a African American dad just trying to get by and trying to provide, and you know how he deals with his own stress, and so for that reason, I'll give a bit more behind why I'm picking him. But yeah, that's why.
It was an acting masterclass.
Oh, it was amazing.
Like, by him and Viola, it was just like, oh my goodness sake, Jesus, these two, just constant battling. It was brilliant. Best black comedian.
Me.
Love it. Best black action star.
Wesley Snipes.
Oh, the OG.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Wesley Snipes. Especially because he saved Marvel.
Tell them.
Yeah, he saved Marvel when they were running out of money and running out of hope.
Mm-hmm.
His portrayal of Blade saved the whole franchise. So you wouldn't have Infinity War and you wouldn't have all of that without Wesley Snipes. And he was really good. It's not action, sorry. But he was amazing in Kevin Hart's drama.
Oh my God.
As was Kevin. But yes. Wesley. Oh my God. Was it called True Story?
True Story.
Yeah.
Was not expecting that.
Yeah, amazing.
That was such a lovely surprise.
Yeah, again, you're like, oh, that's Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Like every half an hour or something.
But also, I was like, I always get worried about my like childhood favourites. Mm. You know, I'm like, please don't be crap now, because like you're a staple in my upbringing, so I want you to be good forever. Yeah. And then when they just do a performance like that, you're just like,
yeah, amazing.
You did. And even in Dolomite,
I didn't watch that.
Oh,
I haven't watched
again,
that.
Again, he came and just smashed it. Like,
but you saw the reviews, you saw everything.
Yeah, I was like, so good.
Yeah.
Best black director.
Just on based on what I've watched and stuff like that, I'm going to say Jordan Peele. Yeah.
I just love how he turned.
And I did my research because last time I didn't have one.
I love that.
Yeah. So
what's your favorite Jordan Peele film?
Get Out. I watched it again the other day.
I love how quick
just
you're
for
like,
no reason.
I know what it is.
Yeah, just for no reason.
Yes.
I just wanted to. I remember watching that for the first time and seeing my nan, and she was like, "Do you want a cup of tea?" And I was like, "No, I don't. I know what you're trying to do."
Do you know what's funny? I watched it, and then I think I loved it even more the second watch.
Yeah.
Like the first watch, I was just so taken aback by this story that it was actually commissioned, because I was like, "Who signed off on it?
Off
like
on
who?"
This?
Was there white people in the room?
Look,
when this
someone
was
with
like
a lot of guilt on their
conscience. Yeah, I was like, so maybe it's like there was just so many questions.
Yeah.
And then when I watched it and kept on watching it, I was like, this is probably one of the best films I've ever seen because it was just brilliant.
Yeah. Two things on that as well is like one of the reasons I picked Jordan Peele as well was the transition from Key and Peele, you know, silly comedy. Obviously, good writing and things like that just go hand in hand with good production and all of that stuff.
Mm.
But to go from something like that and then to drop Get Out, it's just like it's a Kano moment. We didn't see that coming, you know.
But I think that's people's expectations of you.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and we're projecting, and it's like, I've got more.
Yeah, hold on.
Wait a minute.
This is just a stepping stone. Let me show you what I'm really doing.
So that's the end of the quick fire round. Thank you very much, Kazeem. And just to wrap things up, if you had to direct people to YouTube to entice them to watch Farming, the incredible movie, what scene would it be and why?
Oh, the scene that I think you should, that should be, you know, to capture it is the scene or scenes when he rebels.
Yeah.
When he rebels and he steals the snake and he sits in the pub like he owns it.
He's unhinged.
And he starts knocking people out left, right, and centre. That scene is amazing.
I think also the scene when he's like painting himself white and trying to scrub himself.
Oh,
just
yeah.
As that kind of sets the tone of the movie and what it's kind of about, identity.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll recommend that.
Sorry, now that we said it, my mind's just, I wish this happened with African American actors, but it didn't. When he steals for his foster mum.
And that's from the jump as well.
Yeah, so like, you kind of see like...
Yeah, that's a great scene actually.
Yeah, it's kind of like a key moment where he's like, I will do anything to be accepted.
Yeah, to appease you as well.
And then he gets in trouble for it.
She doesn't care.
But at the... Sorry, I know you keep going. Sorry. No. But at the end of the film, doesn't she have it on?
Yes.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Full circle.
It's full circle. And it's kind of like...
that's her like showing she cares.
I always kept it.
Yeah.
I always believed in you, son.
Oh, but Kazeem, it has been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for coming down to talk to us.
No problem.
About Farming, which is a fantastic movie. Please go and watch it if you haven't. We wish you the absolute best. Congratulations.
Likewise.
Again.
Thank you.
Bubba. I hope to see you soon.
Definitely. Thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate it.